Welcome into this edition of Now That's a Darn Good Question. I'm Paul Ballmer, the host of the podcast, where we look at important issues that leaders face in leading and managing safety performance. We've been teaching leaders the world over for almost 25 years how to lead and manage safety performance. Not long after our very first course, we got a call back from one of our good clients who said, "You guys have done a great job in teaching our leaders how to be motivated and lead safety performance, but they're out there, Paul, tripping over the hazards. Can you help us?" And of course, as a fledgling consulting practice early on, we said, absolutely. And we started out the path of developing what we now call recognizing what can hurt us, hazard recognition by another name. Being in the training business and teaching leaders how to lead and followers how to look out after what can hurt them, it's all fundamentally the same issue, safety. But there is one very significant difference when an audience of leaders shows up for a training class and the followers. While everybody initially will show up skeptical, I mean, it is training, it is safety. How do you spell boring? Very quickly, the leaders figure out that they really want the help. Leaders want help in how to lead and manage safety performance. The followers, on the other hand, in a course in recognizing hazards, if you could read their minds, their body language, and sometimes you just have to listen to what they're saying, it's like they're telling me, if I'm teaching, "Paul, I know perfectly well how to recognize a hazard." It's like, "You're wasting my time. It's all those other people out there who are the clueless idiots. Now, go help them, not me." While it's not everybody who comes to a class who thinks that, that's a sense in the room that people don't feel like they really need the help. The leaders want it. The leaders want to give followers this kind of help. And when they do that, if you think about it, they're doing the biggest favor to a follower they possibly could, teaching a follower how to recognize what can hurt them, but the followers don't seem to appreciate it. Hence today's question: why is it that followers are so good at criticizing and being critics of everybody else except themselves? That's the darn good question. Here to help me answer that, slice and dice the anecdotal evidence, the experience I'm having, is a good and longtime friend and colleague, Pete Robinson, Dr. Pete Robinson, who among his many interests has developed a passion for some of the work done by a Nobel Prize winning psychologist, professor of psychology, Daniel Kahneman. Pete, welcome in.
All right. Thanks, Paul. Good to be back. Our second podcast where we're going to use Daniel Kahneman's concepts and theories to help get people home safe. I've been fascinated by reading him. I discovered him last year. But the more I read him, the more concepts I see that can help organizations, help leaders, you know, manage their safety performance better, get people to recognize hazards and you know, do the things they need to do. So we started off the first podcast. We talked, and these aren't just Kahneman's ideas. This is based on that book, Thinking Fast and Slow. Some leaders may even want to get a copy and look at some of this stuff themselves. We can steer them to the appropriate places. But I mean, Kahneman, again, was a behavioral psychologist, PhD academic guy, but actually got the Nobel Prize for applying his principles to economics and the decisions people make around economics. Now, I don't think I'm heading towards Nobel Prize winning stuff, but if we can help people understand how these concepts, especially leaders, help their followers get home safe and better recognize hazards, hey, how can you go wrong with that, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. And while you're the one who's most recently pressed me to read Kahneman, And every time I do, by the way, it's like I feel like he's writing about hazard recognition, the parts I've read. I've actually had over the years a number of leaders come up to me in class or after class and say, Paul, have you read Thinking Fast and Slow? You want to read that book because it's really good and it's really useful. How long ago, Pete, was that book published?
That book was published 10 years ago, 2014. And again, that was kind of, you know, it's like his Bible, his complete works. Because actually one of the things in the appendix are actually the two articles he wrote that the Nobel Prize people in Sweden used for the basis of the award. And it's also kind of sad, and he acknowledges it. He did most of this work with his partner, Amos Tversky. Amos died in 1996. And Nobel Prize only recognizing living people. So Danny Kahneman got recognized, but his partner Amos didn't because he had passed away. And, you know, he talks about that.
Great, 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 great. All right. So before I begin asking you to help understand what the leaders see and what I see when I'm teaching these classes, about followers' reaction and behavior and even interest in recognizing when it hurt them. Let's establish for our listeners on the podcast just a couple of basic terms here that Kahneman uses and see if we can kind of connect up the dots nicely for our listeners about how this relates to leading and managing safety performance in general and hazard recognition more specifically. So let me start with Kahneman's System 1. So System 1 thinking by anyone means what?
System 1 is thinking fast. Something happens, you got to make a decision right away. In our classes, to me, that's a moment of high influence. You know, you got to make a decision. You got to do something. And, Kahneman talks about these things, and most of the time it works pretty well, but there's sometimes biases. And, you know, you've seen those things where you can recognize images wrong sometimes, just because they're you know, a visual bias or something like that. Other problem with System 1 is System 1 never went into a situation where it couldn't make a decision. You know, System 1's very good at making decisions. Doesn't think about it. System 1 is also biased to belief. You know, that System 1 doesn't doubt very much. System 1 believes. So anyway, as relating that to safety, people get complacent sometimes, and they might look at a situation and just in a half a second says, well, that's completely safe. You know, there are no problems. You know, let's proceed. But as opposed to System 1, you know, we also have another system. Kahneman actually calls it our two selves. System 1, System 2. But System 2 is the one that, wait a minute, let's think about it. System 2 kind of evaluates how we did. It kind of keeps score. By our experiences with System 1, that gives us our knowledge and expertise, et cetera. So System 2 generally works pretty well, but they have some biases there too. Everyone's System 2 kind of doesn't recognize all the times we were lucky and also tends to overestimate our abilities. So it's very natural for anybody's System 2 to say, you know, well, I'm pretty good. You know, you ask that famous question, 90% of people will tell you they're an above average driver. Very, very typical. That's somebody's System 2 talking. So one of the good things about our courses, you know, is it trains people to better recognize hazards. And, you know, you can learn how to recognize hazard by getting hurt by a hazard you didn't recognize. That's not a very good way to recognize hazards, right? You would rather learn something like warning flags, and then you learn in a class that gets incorporated in your system too. So now that you're out there on a job site, you know, where you're working in system one, and all of a sudden you might look at something differently. You're going to say, you know, I'm going to put my head on a swivel. I never really did that before until I took that class. But so the training makes people's system ones much better. Training gives them more information, learning in system two, that then they can incorporate when they're out there, you know, on a job or helping other people recognize hazards.
Good, good, good. So let me see if I could sum up this a little bit, this opening question. And then we're going to start looking at behavior of followers in the class. But tell me if I've got this about right. So an example of system one thinking that could be a problem in terms of recognizing hazards would be when somebody says, well, that'll never happen. And they don't even think about it. Right. Yeah, that might get described.
That's an excellent one. System okay. One tends to believe.
Okay.
Don't worry about my crew. We're safe.
Yeah. We can never get hurt. It'll never happen. Okay.
That's probably a red flag.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And by comparison, a problem with system two might be, well, yes, that could happen, but it'll never happen to me.
Right.
Okay. But both of those, by the way, are what I call assumptions. And to me, they're two of the biggest assumptions that people make that show up in real life events that are not good as being false assumptions, incorrect assumptions. A lot of things that people say could never happen. And a lot of things that people think will happen to somebody else, but never may happen to me. Okay, good. We got a good foundation now.
Okay, good.
Now. Let me share with you a very common occurrence in class. Right? So picture a room full of followers, many of whom don't think they need to be there because, Paul, I am perfectly good at this hazard recognition. It's everybody else who can't do it, you know, and they'll sit there for a while and, you know, kind of be bored and not really terribly engaged. And then we get out pictures. And a big part of teaching hazard recognition is just to show people pictures, nothing deliberately set up. We try to get real people in real situations doing the job to the best of their abilities. We don't sneak around with a camera trying to catch people doing anything wrong. Sometimes we even use pictures that our clients send us to be on the cover of their participant manuals because they think it's a real good picture, right? So we bring some of our own and we bring some of the ones that we get from clients, and we'll sit there and spend 2 hours in hazard recognition just showing pictures. All right. Now, before we show followers in these classes pictures, we say we're going to hit the pause button. We're going to slow things down. We're going to give you time to actually look at these pictures. That's like condition number one. And then the second condition is we tell people how to look. So we say, here's what you look for, and here's how you go about looking. You mentioned one, get your head on a swivel, for example. Of course, we're looking at pictures that are projected up on a screen, still like pictures, but they're pictures, and they're not made up, they're real. And we give them almost like a checklist of things to look for. So we give them the process. And what we find is that when we give people time and we give people process, first of all, even the people who don't want to be there, man, they get the pager out and their eyes are on those pictures. And you would be amazed at the ability people have to nitpick the details and see all these flaws. I mean, they see things that I have to back up the video and say, I've seen this look close at the picture. I've seen it 10 times. I saw that before. And they're seeing things. Having taught hazard recognition hundreds of times to thousands and thousands of followers. And when I use the word followers, I'm just talking about anybody, the plant manager, the mine manager, the mill manager, the follower, and they're looking out after his own safety. It really doesn't matter who it is. But when I teach it to the individuals looking out after their own interests, a lot of them don't have much interest in being there until they start seeing pictures of people at work. And you start putting up the pictures of people at work and you give people the time to observe. You say, pause, we're going to freeze frame. You're going to look at a still picture. And we give people a structured process by which to do that. And we don't do this observation in class until we explain how to look, what to look for, where to look. We give them the process. We don't ask them what the process is. We tell them. So we give them time and process, and we show up the pictures. Even people who are totally disinterested in being there, I mean, they will be eyes on, and they'll get the exercise sheets out, and they will be sitting there. This guy's doing this, and he's doing that, and see this. I mean, they will be all over the details. It's amazing how good students are when they're shown pictures and asked to criticize and critique other people. Here's my question. Does that surprise either you or Kahneman? And if it doesn't, why not?
And I would say from a Kahneman's perspective, no surprise at all. No surprise at all. Everyone's system two overwhelms their abilities. And you know, the natural tendency of people is I'm good. And I'm better than these other people. And they'll have observations of other people. They probably have plenty of observations of other people doing something stupid, but their own experiences of doing something stupid, they'll give themselves an excuse. Well, I was distracted, I was tired, you know, their experiences are different. They're stupid, I have an excuse.
Yeah. And let me give you a perfect illustration of that, Pete. It happened like 2 weeks ago. The guy who was the lead critic from the back of the room, you know, it's like, no, that's like the whole world is filled with stupid, clueless people. By the way, he was like 22 years old. It was amazing. Okay. But he was an expert and he was critical of everybody, and not excluding your friendly teacher here, but he's making these comments and the dude's leaning back in his chair with two legs off the floor, leaning back in a chair, throwing spitballs at people. And I'm trying to, like, I don't want to have you get hurt in class, so you could kind of lean forward but keep criticizing. I mean, it's like, why is it that people aren't at least have some degree of sensitivity and awareness of their own behavior? They're terribly critical about everybody else, and yet they just kind of cut themselves slack.
Well, again, Kahneman would say, You show pictures, you're gonna get examples of people system one. You know, they're gonna say things without really thinking. And I think from you as a teacher standpoint, that's good. You're seeing the flaws in their thinking.
Okay, so you're not surprised. Kahneman wouldn't be surprised either way that people were such great critics of everybody else, but they keep cutting themselves slack. Now, let me try this question. So this behavior of great at criticizing everybody else goes on for a couple of hours of practice exercises. And at the end of that, the clear message is sort of bouncing off the walls is when it comes to this hazard recognition thing, we're better together, right? You could be somebody brand new with very limited experience, but you got a fresh set of eyes. You could be somebody with a ton of experience and know all the details. But everybody has observations they can contribute. And we're talking safety here. And so, you know, if you're on the receiving end of any of this kind of criticism, it's like people are doing you a favor, right? They are pointing out ways in which you could get hurt. You don't want to get hurt, right? So you would also think that people would be accepting of the feedback from their peers. When we're talking peers now, followers, not the boss being critical of you, but peers giving you feedback and observations about how you might get hurt. You would think that people would be receptive of that, and alternatively, that people would therefore be inclined to freely give that advice. But there's this huge barrier that seems to exist in everybody's mind that I don't want to give anybody else feedback, and I sure as heck don't want anybody else giving me feedback either. Does that, dichotomy is probably a word you could use to describe it. Does that dichotomy surprise you or Kahneman?
Not really. And as you mentioned, and Kahneman would absolutely agree with this, is get a second set of eyes, and especially people with a different perspective. You know, you will make a better decision. Organizations will make a better decision, and you know, a site will make a better decision on safety, and you know, right down to a specific job or you know, a project or a turnaround. You know, get those criticisms out front. Because what happens, and Kahneman talks about it, is once a project kind of gets rolling, people don't want to hear criticisms because after a while it's like, well, you don't believe us, you're not loyal or something. So, so, and because of that, you know, sometimes you miss things. Sometimes you miss things. I mean, you know, as kind of an aside, you don't have to put this in, but Kahneman's a big fan of pre-mortems, you know, where you ask the question, okay, we're getting ready to do this project. And I think you could ask it just from a safety perspective. You are going to get ready to do this project. Okay, imagine 1 year from now, the project didn't go well from a safety perspective. Hopefully it was just a near miss. But what do you think that one thing was? What do you think that one thing was? So that kind of gets potential doubts on the table. And that way people can think about that before you start the project.
Doubts on the table. Doubts on the table. You know, that is the essence of hazard recognition. And Kahneman likes this word doubt, doesn't he?
Yes, yes. Kahneman, if he passed away last year, he would probably love to have the conversation with you and me about safety. How can we use these things to get people home more safely? He never really talked about that. You know, he didn't have any experience with safety, but he would be all over that.
He wrote in his book, and I will freely admit that 499 pages. I have not read this book cover to cover, probably never will, but everything I read in it, it's like jumping off the page. He's talking about safety and hazards. And, you know, he's a psychologist. I like to say that the whole hazard recognition thing takes place in the 5.5-inch space between people's ears, because that's what it's about. So to this point of doubt, he wrote, "More doubt is the last thing you need when you are in trouble." And yet, when it comes to safety, doubt is like the best possible thing that somebody can do for their safety. Why is it, in either your opinion or his, that this process of doubt, that doubting is such a hard thing for us?
Well, actually, I'm going to have to ask you, where did you read that? Do you remember what chapter?
It's in the conclusion. It's like
in the conclusion. Okay.
It's like three sentences up from the very end of the book.
Okay. There's real gems in the conclusion. You know, one of the gems is trust your critics to be knowledgeable and fair. But I think that's another one. I mean, you know, when you're in the spur of the moment, your system one tends not to doubt. Your system one tends to believe. Your system one is biased towards believing. But to me, that's the whole beauty of stop the job. What is going on with stopping the job is you're getting out of system one and engaging system two. I mean, like you said, Kahneman doesn't really want to doubt. You know, he really would like us to figure things out and move right along. But I think with safety, sometimes we have to doubt because we just can't afford to get somebody seriously hurt. So, you know, it's that end consequence. I mean, he won the Nobel Prize for financial stuff. So, okay, somebody makes a bad financial decision and doesn't sign up for their 401k. Oh, okay. They lose a little money, but we don't want to have, you know, somebody get hurt because somebody doesn't engage their system too. So stopping the job and, you know, in a group session, stopping the job, like the Notre Dame example, you got what, 50 or 100 system twos. Somebody may have some other experiences to share. So to me, I would use this to reinforce stopping the job.
Good. Now, Kahneman's also written in his book about what I would call the pros and the cons of focus.
Pros and cons of what?
Pros and cons of focus.
Focus, yeah.
People's attention focused on something. And I think that if you just sort of took a poll of leaders, and said with respect to safety and working safely, is focus a good thing or a bad thing? I think every one of us, myself included, would say it's a good thing, right? Pay attention, you know, kind of wall out all these distractions and really kind of get your head in the game and focus on the task at hand. That's a good thing. Sounds like a good thing, right? But the question that sort of begins to raise is too much of a good thing or a bad thing? If you ask leaders the question about focus, they would tell you, I would tell you, I think any rational person would tell you that when it comes to recognizing hazards, focus on the task at hand is a good thing. Kahneman has devoted a fair amount of time in his book and in his studies and writings about focus. And the question is too much focus even better, or is at some point does too much focus start becoming a bad thing? And in particular, he starts talking about invisible gorillas. So perhaps you can explain what's this invisible gorilla all about, and how that relates to focus, and focus in turn relates to system one and system two.
Okay. Again, the system, invisible gorilla was actually somebody else's work he incorporated, and he gave them all the credit. But anyway, you can Google it. So, you know, it's about a 20-second video. And what it is these people, there's several people, and they have to basically, they're passing a basketball back and forth, back and forth. And they're all wearing black. They're all wearing black. So your assignment is to count the number of passes that they make to each other. So, you know, it starts and, you know, there's a few of them that are good enough to play on the Harlem Globetrotters, and you see some neat passes and you're about halfway done. And then a person in a gorilla suit in black walks across directly in front of you, directly in front of you. So at the end of the assignment, you ask them, how many passes were there? And, you know, most people are good. You know, the answer is like 14. So then you ask them the second question. Did you see the gorilla walk across? And 90% of the people who have never seen this before said, what? I never saw that. I never saw that. And Kahneman loved that example. And he used that as a good example. I think we can relate to safety. So focus on a task. Focus on a task. And basically you're in system one, but you've got your system two fully engaged, fully engaged. Your system one needs help with this. You know, your system one could take in the data of the passes, but system two is doing the count. System two is doing the count. But it has to focus so much on the counting that it's blind. It's cognitively blind. So that is a very normal thing. So, you know, I can give you a real good safety example of that. So you've seen assignments where somebody has to do some welding and you might be close to some flammable material. So the person doing the welding, you know, they really have to focus on the welding. So they have to focus on the welding so much that they can't see other things. So people have already figured that out. Well, you need to get somebody else in there, right? What is that person called?
They call
the
him
fire watch.
Watch.
The fire watch.
Thank you. The fire watch.
You got two system twos there. That one guy can just focus on the welding. You know, there's no way he's going to be able to look at all the warning signs. He's got to concentrate on his welding. You know, he can't, you know, put his head on a swivel and all that. But you put another person there, that's the fire watch. And hopefully you put a good experienced person there, somebody who knows what could happen, you know, for flammable materials around welding. And that person's responsibility is to focus from their system two perspective. So as a team, you got a much higher probability of getting home safe than the one guy who's just doing the welding. Just doing the welding.
Wow. That is a great example, Pete. Thank you for the illustration. And it brings a lot of other examples in play where you have the second set of eyes built in either before or after. But it also illustrates a point that kind of the light went on for me that just because you're in system two doesn't mean you're safer necessarily.
You know, you look at the welder. I mean, system one, he's doing the welder. He's he's got to do that job. But that takes a lot of concentration. That takes a lot of concentration. I mean, it's like driving a car in city traffic. You know, talking on a cell phone in a city drive, that is a huge risk. That is a huge risk. Now, maybe you could do that if you're driving in a country because it's easier to drive in system one. You're going to do it subconsciously. So you can get distracted a little bit in system two. So, but in general, that's why we don't want people to talk on the cell phone anyway. We want them to focus on system one. Just watch the road, keep an eye out on the hazards, you know, do your focus for that. You know, you've learned from past experiences or training, so you've incorporated so you can do your system one stuff kind of automatically.
So there's a place for system one to help keep you safe. There's a place for system two to help keep you safe. Each has its advantages. Each has its disadvantages and liabilities and blind spots, if you want to think about
right.
it.
Right, right. And Kahneman would say most of the time our system ones and twos work fine and we make the right decisions. But I think the beauty of Kahneman's stuff is he saw when we have biases or when these systems break down. So we need to watch out for that. And I think, you know, some of that we can incorporate in our training right around safety. I would argue we already do, but we don't realize what we're doing.
Well, on that note, let me segue to the final question of the day here of the podcast. So we're not academics. Kahneman was, right? He was a research guy. He was interested in how humans think, fast, slow, good, bad, anything in between. That was kind of his business, was to study us. If you're on the podcast here, if you're listening to this podcast, you know, you're not an academic either. You're a leader with a particular interest in seeing to it that everyone goes on live and well at the end of the day. So there are ideas here that that are pitched to leaders. As you pointed out, as I would also add, the whole idea of teaching followers how to recognize hazards is to make them more self-sufficient so that they can see what can hurt them and don't get hurt, in which case leading gets a whole lot easier, not necessarily easy. But let me ask you the kind of final question here, Pete. So given your knowledge of Kahneman, your own personal experience and knowledge as well, let's get practical. What do you think Kahneman would do or suggest that would be a benefit to leaders? Like, what ideas does he have that you want to put to good use to help make a difference in hazard recognition by your followers? What might he suggest?
Well, I think there's things we've just talked about. Recognize you're going to get criticism. I mean, I would almost argue it's better to get criticism than silence. And it's very normal to hear the criticism, you know, it's everybody else's issue. So I think that goes back to, as a leader, look for that criticism, you know, address the criticism. You know, it gives you an opportunity to reinforce messages. You know, you are the one most responsible for your safety, but you can help other people get home safe too. Those are basic things we do anyway. I mean, Kahneman would just give thumbs up, you know, absolutely, absolutely. You know, we talked about criticism. We talked about focus. We talked about doubt. Anything else on your mind that you'd like to hear about safety as and getting leaders to improve safety as it relates to the Kahneman concepts?
Well, let me just replay what you just said, restate what you said, and I have at least one more question. So what you're saying is that from a leader's standpoint, when they're getting pushback from followers, when they're getting fingers pointed by followers, when they're getting all this chatter and criticism, that's a good thing. See that as a good thing, not a bad thing.
Right. They're engaged.
Yeah. Okay. Kind of go back to the opening premise I have, the whole idea behind teaching followers how to recognize hazards. You're teaching them how to protect themselves, keep themselves safe. But in Kahneman's view, how would he see this question? What are the odds that followers are going to solve this problem on their own?
I think he would have a certain amount of skepticism, you know, maybe when the boss is around. But I think he would absolutely believe that people need to keep each other safe. And, you know, we have the sorry technique that we teach in the leadership class, but it is so important that we teach that peer to peer. So help each other out. You know, I think you're doing something unsafe. How can I help you? That's working collectively together to get the best outcome.
Kahneman was, if I've read his words correctly, and again, I've only read snippets of the book, he was a fan of nudging people to do the right thing.
Yes.
Creating structures and processes that kind of pushed them in the right direction as opposed to just left them on their own.
Oh, thank you for giving me the prompt about nudging. I had another idea this afternoon to relate to safety. Okay, we're getting ready to start a job. And we have a form, you know, I've seen in many, you know, work permit or, you know, all those forms where you're going to list what you're going to do, right? I can't remember how many acronyms I've seen. But anyway, somewhere in that list, there will be a section for PPE, right? So how can we nudge people to make a decision about safety? I would say make those blank forms, every single box is checked. And make them do the analysis. Yeah, well, you know, we need eyeglasses, but we don't need a face shield, you know? And, you know, our chances of running into H2S are low, so we don't need an H2S monitor. But nudge them to make an active decision and think about it and take away, as opposed to just saying, well, I need this, check, that, check. So that is that to me is an example of how we can nudge in safety. And I'm sure our good, smart listeners might think of other examples. And if they do, we'd love to hear about them.
Yes, we would. Yes, we would. So if you're a listener, I'd say keep those cards and letters coming our way. Pete, let me give you one last shot at a quote that I found close to the end of Kahneman's book. And I think we'll finish off our podcast on this. Kahneman wrote that he wrote his book that is oriented to the critics and the gossipers rather than the decision makers.
Yeah.
Why did he do that? Why did he write that? Why did he think that way?
Well, I think he ran into so many examples where people got suggestions on what they should do and they didn't listen. And then, you know, bad things happen. Bad things happen. So, you know, it's just like Kahneman believes, you know, you should be an optimist. I think Kahneman struggled because he was not an optimist. He liked to find all these biases. So, but anyway, you know, even the water cooler feedback is very important. And I would argue as a leader, that gives you a good opportunity to increase your performance visibility. Because, you know, hey, boss, you talk about all this stuff. Let me tell you how it really happens out there, you know. People, again, on the water cooler are very good critics, obviously. They're good critics of leaders, they're good critics of organizations. Again, I think Kahneman's point was you want to get that information. You want to somehow get that information. And you really got to think about it. Doesn't mean, you know, it's like safety suggestions. You want a suggestion. Doesn't mean you're going to incorporate it, but, you know, you're going to have a dialogue. You're going to think about it. You're going to get some gems. And you know, this is people telling you at the water cooler, if you're there, they tell each other, you know, oh, boss says this or organization says this. This is the way it really happened. I mean, they may not have a good view of reality. You have an opportunity to explain that to them. You know, we still have to have a business and, you know, we can't ignore the financials, et cetera. But, you know, it gives them an opportunity to, you know, focus back in some speech on safety. You know, if we're not sure, you know, we can always finish the job tomorrow. You know, we can make up for that productivity, but, you know, somebody gets hurt.
Pete, I like the use of that word gem here a minute ago. And I think that's a perfect way to finish this one off. So reflecting on everything you've said here, it kind of takes me back to the whole thing, the whole reason why we're in business as a consulting practice. And why we're passionate about what we're passionate about. You know, our mission for the last 25 years has been to seek out best practices and teach best practices. and also to kind of shed light on the challenges that leaders face in seeing to it that everybody goes home alive and well at the end of every single day. And I think to your point of gems, between you and Kahneman, you have provided our listeners with some real gems, both in terms of insight into the nature of the challenge, as well as the best practices to help followers recognize hazards, take them seriously, and do something better as a result of that. So thank you for joining us. And to our listeners, we will see you soon.